From the Centre for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Natasha Moore. Amy Orr Ewing is the director of the Oxford Centre for Christian Apologetics. In between speaking engagements at the UK Parliament and the White House, and in between writing multiple books, she's just finishing up her doctorate at Oxford. Her subject? Dorothy L. Sayers. So this week we'll be taking a close look at the life and work of the extraordinary Sayers. But a quick note before we begin, this is actually part two of our conversations with Amy. If you want to hear Amy talk about her own life and work, including a remarkable story about giving Bibles to leaders of the Taliban, you can find that conversation on our website, publicchristianity.org, or our podcast on iTunes. Just type Life and Faith in the search box to find us. But for now, let's get back to Dorothy L. Sayers. Writer of detective fiction, she was a contemporary of Agatha Christie. Woman of Letters, which I think is just a fabulous job title, really. And she was among the first cohort of women to graduate from the University of Oxford in 1919.
She began her career in the advertising industry. She came up with advertising slogans about Guinness and mustard that are still well known today, 100 years later. So she was a brilliant sort of public communicator.
So, for example, as a copywriter for S.H. Benson, she worked on the iconic Guinness is Good for You campaign. And you've probably come across one or two of these ads yourself. It's still around today. In one of the ads Sayers worked on, there's a toucan with its bill arched over two pints of Guinness. And underneath is a jingle that she wrote. If he can say as you can, Guinness is good for you. How grand to be a toucan. Just think what toucan do. I'm not entirely sure I get it, but it has been a very influential campaign over the years. Then, of course, she wrote a series of detective novels, probably the work that she's best known for, introducing readers to the characters of Lord Peter Wimsey and Harriet Vane, perhaps the original crime-fighting duo with romance thrown in.
One of the things that's interesting about her detective fiction is that it's still in print today from the golden age of detective writers. It's only Sayers and Agatha Christie that are still in print. So her work has stood the test of time.
But what Sayers is maybe less known for, at least today, is her work as a public Christian. And this is where Simon and I started our conversation with Sayers expert Amy Orr Ewing.
She, in the 1940s, sort of marshalled the new media of her day by getting onto the radio and becoming a public communicator really about Christian faith. She wrote a series of plays about the life of Jesus that at the time were quite controversial because they didn't use the King James, you know, language. They were, you know, they were screaming headlines about, you know, the Lord's name being taken in vain or sort of popular slang. She was trying to bring the gospel stories to life, and hundreds of thousands of people heard those plays. She also wrote essays and gave public lectures. There are multiple volumes of her essays. She wrote theology. She wrote a brilliant book about the Trinity called The Mind of the Maker. She wrote thousands, up to 50,000 letters, corresponded with people who were seekers, people who were friends. It's a fascinating corpus of writing. And then towards the end of her life, she came across the poet Dante and taught herself Italian. She was a modern linguist and decided, you know, I think I can do a better job of translating Dante into the English language, and published the Penguin translation of Dante, which meant because of that, more people read Dante in the 20th century than in the previous centuries put together. So she was a brilliant apologist for the Christian faith. She was a public intellectual speaking into issues about trying to rebuild Britain after the Second World War. She wrote really interesting, thoughtful, theologically informed essays about work, about gender. She's just a fascinating person, really.
Yeah, quite a busy woman. sounds like.
Yes, absolutely.
She was also an honorary Inkling, kind of, wasn't she? So this group of writers, including C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, who used to meet to read their writing to one another. Yeah. She was connected with them.
She didn't live in Oxford, so she wasn't an Inkling. She wasn't there at the Eagle and Child for their meetings, but she corresponded quite a lot with C.S. Lewis, and she was highly regarded by Charles Williams. They had a very interesting correspondence as well. And he regarded her insights into Dante. Obviously, he himself wrote about Beatrice and wrote about Dante's poetry. He regarded her insights as, you know, utterly brilliant. Karl Barth thought she was one of the most outstanding British theologians. Archbishop William Temple offered her the Lambeth Doctorate. She was the first woman to be offered that honour, but she turned it down. She had rather unfortunate private life. In her 20s, she had an illegitimate child that she kept secret. Her parents never knew. There's only one person other than her son that knew about the existence of this child. So she did all of this extraordinary work of public communication and writing in the context of this dark secret, which obviously in the 1940s and 50s was a way more extreme secret to carry than it would be today. So there's an interesting kind of psychological dimension to her work as well.
So she's famous for writing these detective novels. She also wrote a lot of theology, as you say. Those sound like two completely different things. Is that just kind of two different sides to her personality, or do you think of them as linked?
She certainly didn't see any discontinuity between the genres she wrote in. She wrote detective fiction. She wrote plays, a lot of plays in verse. She wrote essays and she wrote longer pieces of theology, and she translated Dante. And for her, she saw her work as a holistic whole. She couldn't understand why there was consternation that someone who, you know, wrote mysteries about someone being murdered in the coal hole and then wrote about the Trinity. She couldn't see a discontinuity between those two things, and it really frustrated her that people wanted to read a discontinuity into those things.
How do you see them as linking together?
For me, one of the things that I'm looking at in my thesis is Sayers's perception of truth and how she came at truth through narrative, through stories, and through what she called pattern, which is a kind of overarching concept encapsulating the structural coherence of reality. And those two underpinning ways, means of both communicating the truth and discovering truth come through all her work. So in the detective fiction, you see a story unfolding and you see imposter narratives, you see false narratives that are not the truth, even though they're stories, because they don't fit the structure of reality. So you've got to reorganise the facts. You've got to reorganise the evidence into the right structure. You then see that in her religious plays, where she looks at the kind of overarching structure that the creeds provide for reality, the Christian creeds, and then how narrative, how story kind of works together with that. And you see the same thing played out across the body of her work.
I think that fans of mystery novels might not realise that they're doing something potentially theological there.
Yeah.
Are you saying that life is like a novel? Life has a story? Life has these patterns?
I think what Sayers believed was that truth is actually true, and that when we push and pull the texture of narrative to try and get at the truth, truth is discoverable. And so through the detective fiction, you see this process of examining, exploring evidence, putting it together in a certain way, and then realizing, no, that's not what happened, putting it together in another way until you come to discover the truth when you've seen the pattern, how the pieces fit together. And that's often a true story of what happened. So for me, there's something deeply theological about the detective fiction. It's a process process of discerning and discovering the truth on the basis of evidence within an overarching structural framework of coherence.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. In her essay, Are Women Human?, Dorothy L. Sayers writes this. In reaction against the age-old slogan, woman is the weaker vessel, or the still more offensive, woman is a divine creature, we have, I think, allowed ourselves to drift into asserting that a woman is as good as a man, without always pausing to think what exactly we mean by that. What I feel we ought to mean is something so obvious that it is apt to escape attention altogether, namely, that a woman is just as much an ordinary human being as a man, and with just as much right to the tastes and preferences of an individual. What is repugnant to every human being is to be reckoned always as a member of a class and not as an individual person. Strong words, but as Amy explains, Sayers would never have called herself a feminist.
Yeah. She didn't like the word feminist, partly because obviously she was familiar with both first and second wave feminism and neither really adopted her. She disliked the idea of arguing for women's equality on the basis of calling women a class. So she's saying, you know, we're not a special class of human, we're actually human. And so she wrote two groundbreaking essays, one, Are Women Human?, one, The Human Not Quite So Human. The second essay really challenging the church to live up to the example of Jesus. And she ends that essay with this amazing quotation saying, it's no surprise that women were first at the cradle and last at the cross because they'd never known a man like this man. She kind of lands her arguments for the humanity of women in the person of Jesus brilliantly. And it's actually incredibly up to date now when you think she was writing that in the 1940s.
Yeah, I suppose it is strange to think of 50% of the population is kind of a lobby group
for their interests. Well, quite, yeah. Or homogenous in some ways. So she has this funny quote about where, you know, women are arguing to be able to go to university and be given degrees. And people say, well, why do they want to do what the men want to do? Why should women want to know about Aristotle? And she says, well, it's not that women as a class want to know about Aristotle, but I want to know about him. You know, and I'm a human being too. Yeah.
Now, Sayers is described as one of the few people who could really make Orthodox Christianity interesting for people.
Yes.
How did she do that?
Well, I think that her work in the advertising industry meant that she understood the power of language. She was incredibly witty. She kind of put things across in quite a simple and straightforward way. She also really understood the power of story and narrative to capture big truths as well as to capture people's imagination. And so I think it's a combination of factors, but those two are pretty important.
She famously took on one of the more complex and difficult Christian doctrines in the Trinity. You mentioned the mind of the Maker. So she obviously thought that there was something about that doctrine that isn't completely alien to us as people.
Yeah, she believed that the Christian doctrine of the Trinity provided an extraordinary opportunity for creative people to resonate with Christian truth, but also to understand the process of creativity. So she was trying to say, you know, God is a creator and we've been created in his image. Therefore, when anyone creates anything, there's a Trinitarian process that is evidence for that Trinitarian God. And so she kind of pointed to the processes of creativity, whether it be artists writing literature or creating paintings or music, as evidence for God. It's quite an interesting apologetic approach. But she wanted to sort of, for the average person, to demystify, in a way, who God is and show the reality of Father, Son and Holy Spirit in the real lives of everyday people.
Mm. Do you think that literature and art and music and that sort of thing points beyond itself, perhaps towards the transcendent? And in a time where we're dealing with people very much tied to sort of hard materialism, is this an interesting kind of angle as an apologist for you?
Yeah, certainly. The power of story, the power of imagination shouldn't be underestimated. And of course, the fact that in Jesus, God enacts on the stage of this world the story of his son is a brilliant kind of confirmation of our instincts for creativity. I also think there's a wonderful argument to be made from and for beauty, that the Christian worldview gives us a coherent foundation for the instinct for beauty, as well as being beautiful and coherent in and of itself. And so art and literature points us towards that instinct for beauty, which is itself explained by who we are, creatures made in the image of God to create.
From the Centre for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with Natasha Moore and Simon Smart. Now, this conversation with Amy Orr Ewing was part two of the chat that we had with her. To listen to part one, where Amy talks about her brush with cancer and bringing Bibles to Afghanistan, among other things, head to our website, publicchristianity.org, or look us up on iTunes. Just type Life and Faith in the search box to find us. Next week, from prison to the pulpit, how an encounter with God changed Reverend Paul Cowley's life.